And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every single episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Zygerian slavers are behind the sudden disappearance of an entire colony of people on the planet of Kyros. As Anakin and Ahsoka rush to defuse a series of bombs planted by the slavers, Obi-Wan must fight with their imposing leader. There will be a wild Darth Vader appears, Ahsoka questioning her master, and Obi-Wan getting his ass kicked. We are talking about Kidnap this week. Hello, Minister Honeywell.
Hello.
How was your wedding?
It took.
if you guys didn't hear our episode last week, Chris got to officiate a wedding.
Yes.
Yay!
My first legal wedding. Signed the paperwork, put it in an envelope, put it in the mail the next day. Zip, zop, zoop, said the magic words.
And apparently, you were telling me before the show, there's a lot of Doctor Who fans there.
There were Doctor Who fans there. The nerd level was high once I started digging into the younger people there. I think that's in general anyway. But yeah, there were some good nerds there. It was an intense experience. It wasn't people that I knew very well. As a matter of fact, it was just the groom that I sort of knew. He was a coworker of mine for a short time. So it was strange. It was very, very intense. I learned something that I've observed at other weddings, but I forgot about until I was up there and the bride and groom were facing each other in front of me. And that is one third of it, you're doing the legal procedure. One third of it, you're putting on a show for the family. And the other third, you're just there to get that poor bride and groom through it. Because, oh my God, the looks on their faces, it was great. And it's, you know, that's something I see at almost every wedding, you know. They're smiling too, but like, when they first get up there and they realize, here it is. the groom just started sweating, and the bride got the deer in the headlights look, and kept like doing panic looks over to me, so where I'd have to sort of look her in the eyes like, it's okay, it's moving forward. Very, very short ceremony too, so that was sweet. I think everybody, it was very simple. It was in the backyard of a really nice cottage on one of the Finger Lakes, and you know, the music they played was basically through a phone, through one of a little Bluetooth speaker, you know, so it was low key. It was good.
Sounds a lot like my best friend's wedding. She had a very super simple wedding, and I've already told her, I was like, I loved your wedding. I'm stealing things from it.
I'm thinking of going more nerd themed weddings after this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's something that my best friend did. Because you know how you give gifts to your wedding guests? They got about, they maybe had like 60 people. So they took like 60 of their favorite books and wrote a message in it of why it was one of their favorite books, and you could take a book. And I actually have one literally sitting right here, two of them, and they just wrote these like little messages in the beginning about like, you know, I picked up an Anne Rice book that I hadn't got, but they had a little sticker that like on the title page, and it says Pandora by Anne Rice, Given with Love by Megan and Lauren. And then it says, being the only one about a woman, this is one of my favorite Anne Rice books. I also do love Ancient Rome, love Megan. And so that's what they did. They wrote like little messages about like why they're their favorite books and stuff. And that was like just such a cool idea that I'm totally stealing that from them.
That's what weddings are for. Steal all the good ideas.
And kind of the opposite of my sister's wedding, who apparently had no idea what went into a wedding, and I'm doing the opposite of everything she did. I love her to death, but that wedding was an adventure. I think I talked about it on the show. I don't remember what episode it was, but I remember I did. It was an adventure.
Yes, there was a story about taking, you know, having to get grandma up a hill, if I recall.
Yeah, because who needs ushers at a wedding on big rocky hills? and ordering flowers for the wedding the morning of the wedding. Why not?
Sure.
I'm kind of excited, though, because I'm going to a wedding next month, and one of my really good friends is finally going to get a chance to marry her partner, and they're going to get married at a ziplining place.
Oh, all right.
And I'm like, if they don't zipline into their own wedding, I would be very disappointed.
Zipline in or zipline out. Either
Something
way, zipline
like
out would be great. Dun, 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 dun. Off they go.
I know. I'm very excited.
You have the ceremony way up on top of a, you know, at the top of the platform.
I will not be getting up there. I don't like heights, so I'd be just be like, get a microphone. Make sure everyone has microphones. But I'm excited, though, because the previously named best friend is coming down from North Carolina to stay with me for a couple days, and I don't get to see her a lot, so I'm just excited that she's coming to town, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. Shouldn't get in the way of Jay Guys and Jedi, though, because it's on a Saturday.
Excellent.
And I sound normal again. I have power.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I was just talking to my dad about that. I was just like, 1 week ago, we were in the dark, and I was calling Chris on my phone.
By the light of your tablet.
Yeah, the light of my tablet and a flashlight.
And your crank-up flashlight.
It was okay. We actually, my mom lives about an hour north of Tampa, and we got more damage here in Georgia than she did in Tampa. Because they had boarded up their house and, like, wrapped it in a heavy tarp, and they were prepared for it. And she also has 3 palm trees. That's it. So they got away, like, just, you know, with some like debris around and stuff, but they were fine, and she lost a whole palm tree. Me, on the other hand, we have one road in and out of our neighborhood, and a tree fell on the road, and then 2 trees fell on the top of our driveway, and all of it fell in power lines. So even once they cleared the tree out of the road, we still couldn't leave because we didn't have a way to clear the trees from our driveway. So I had to miss like 2 days of work, and we didn't have power for 2 days. And so they finally came that Wednesday morning and freed us. And my boss had called me, and he was like, "Are you coming to work today?" And I was like, "Yes, I'm coming to work." And I got to work with my
charge everything.
Pretty much. I went to work, and I brought my USB splitter, and I plugged in, like, my phone, my tablet, my Game Boy. Like, I had, like, 4 things plugged into our computer. My boss was like, "You're happy to be free, aren't you?" And I was like, "I took a very cold shower this morning. I'm happy." It was great. We had fun. So, speaking of my mom, I promised her I would do this because I was literally talking to her right before you called me. And today is my mommy's birthday, and I told her I would tell her happy birthday and that I love her, and my mom has been on the show before, and she told me to tell you, Chris, hello.
Tell her I said hi, and grab a couple bottles of wine and come on the show again.
Now, I'm hoping sometime before the end of the year I can get down and see her, but not sure if I will, but we'll see. But I have some cool newsy things, though.
I see that.
Yeah, so in the darkness of not having power last week, I had nothing better to do, so I finally got to finish a bunch of books that I had started and hadn't finished, because I have a very bad habit of starting books and never finishing them, and I had nothing better to do. So I finally finished reading Dark Disciple, which would take place in would be season 7 of Clone Wars, that they never got to put into episode, but they had already written the scripts for. So they took those scripts and turned it into this novel, and this novel is considered canon. The reason I'm bringing this up now is last week when we were talking about Carnage of Krell, I had talked about how, like, they never mentioned Krell for the rest of the show, and it was such a big moment and stuff like that. I won't give away why they brought it up, just in case you want to read the book and stuff like that, listeners. But they did mention Krell, and they were like, yes, it was Mace Windu, Obi-Wan, and Yoda. And they were like, yes, that was very alarming when Krell defected. And that's it. That's all they said. But it proved me wrong that they would have mentioned Krell again later in the series if they got to make that season.
If it would have happened.
But it is still considered canon. So they did bring that up. But I was reading it, and I was just like, oh, we just talked about that! And I've got to pull up this thing. Okay, and then something cool is they announced apparently they announced this book several months ago, but I just found it. But next month, in October, they're releasing a book called From a Certain Point of View. And it's 40 short stories set from different perspectives around Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And it's for the 40th anniversary. And so what it is that some of these short stories, like, one is from Obi-Wan's point of view, one is from Tarkin's point of view, one is the point of view of the stormtrooper who let the droids get away.
All right, that makes sense.
So, but it sounds like a lot of fun, but what makes me the most excited is just the freaking author list. A lot of a lot of comic book authors are going to be a part of this, like Karen Gillan, who is the current, who wrote the run of Darth Vader for Marvel. Charles Soule, who is writing the current run of Darth Vader for Marvel. Paul Dini, Matt Fraction, Kelly Sue DeConnick. E.K. Johnson, who wrote the Ahsoka book, is teaming up with Ashley Eckstein. Pablo Hidalgo is writing the Tarkin story, which made me super excited. But this list is crazy. Will Wheaton's writing one. Chuck Wendig. So I'm just really excited. Charles Soule, who's writing the current Darth Vader, is writing a Lando Calrissian story, which makes me super excited because Charles Soule does really well with kind of roguish fun characters. If you want to see those, he's currently writing a series called Curse Words for Image. It's amazing. It's so good. If you want a kooky, crazy new comic to go read a comic called Curse Words. But it just sounds really cool to have, like, these short stories, and they're all from different points of view throughout A New Hope. So I'm very, very, very excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and some of the characters they're having is going to be, like, Boba Fett, Darth Sidious, Mon Mothma, Wedge Antilles, Tarkin, Breha Organa, which is Bail's wife, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Lando, Yavin 4 Rebel Trooper. So I'm really excited about this. It sounds like it's a cool little project, and they said that, like, after they pay the writers, the rest of the proceeds are going to charity. So I think it's just going to be a really cool anthology book that's going to be coming out soon, and I'm very excited for it. It's going to be released on October 3rd of next month.
Not long.
No. And I have to say, now that I finished Dark Disciple, I was thinking about finally sitting down and reading Splinters of the Mind's Eye.
Yeah.
But the thing is, very recently, in this last week, the Captain Phasma book dropped. And I apparently, from what I can tell, it's a freaking crazy book. Like, people are like, it's so good, and this is everything Phasma should be, and it's scary, and it's amazing. And people are like, if this is what Phasma really is, I can't wait till Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So I might have to give the Phasma book a go before Last Jedi comes out, and then do Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Splinter of the Mind's Eye ain't going anywhere. You got a new Star Wars movie that, you know, Last Jedi's coming out in a couple months, so.
Yeah. Though I did get about 4 pages. I just started Splinters of the Mind's Eye, and like 4 pages in, Leek was like, and there she is, the apple of my eye.
The most beautiful woman in the universe.
Leia. And I just was like, bleh, bleh, Luke, no, bleh. This isn't Game of Thrones. Bleh.
And it seemed so right at the time.
I know. We didn't know. Nobody knew. Well, yeah. I didn't know. I wasn't born yet. But I was swimming at the time. but
hanging.
I was just some low hanging fruit there at the time. And so finally, I just have to give a nod that a lot of people are joking that Star Wars did better at the Emmys last night than they did the last two Oscars. And that's because Riz Ahmed from Rogue One, Donald Glover from the coming Han Solo movie, and Laura Dern from the coming Episode 8 movie all won Emmys.
Ooh, Laura Dern, did she win it for, she must have won it for Twin Peaks, right?
She won it for, I think it was for Big Little Lies.
Oh.
I'm 99.9% sure it's Big Little Lies because I don't think it was Handmaid's Tale. I don't think she's in Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, okay. She was but in the new Twin Peaks, too.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were joking that Star Wars did better at the Emmys last night than they did the Oscars. And two of those were historic wins.
Laura Dern was going to be in Episode 8.
Mm-hmm. She's going to be in Episode 8, so... but Donald Glover was the first African-American man to win directing for a comedy role, and Riz Ahmed was the first Asian man to win an acting role in his category, and only the second... Oh, no, he was the first Asian man to win for an acting role, and the second Asian period to win an acting role at the Emmys. Because another woman won before him, but I can't remember her name off the top of my head. So, yay, Star Wars! We're winning shit! That is not actually a Star Wars movie. Yay! Maybe now they'll put Riz on the back of the Rogue One box. Yay! His name's not on the back of the Rogue One Blu-ray box. And I know. And so now he's not only Emmy Award-winning Riz Ahmed,
right,
or the first Asian man to win an acting award Riz Ahmed, but it blows my fucking mind in the first place, because if Bodhi Rook hadn't defected from the Empire, there would be no goddamn movie. He is the,
or
if
no
he
Star Wars.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, he would have never, if Bodhi hadn't have taken the message to Saul Guerrero, it would have never gone to Jyn, it would have never gone to the Rebels, and it would have all died from the Death Star. Like, it was Bodhi who put the entire fucking movie in action, and his name is not on the back of the Rogue One Blu-ray disc. And it is now my duty as a fan to tweet Star Wars a lot until I get an answer. Okay, I've only tweeted them once, and it was more just along the lines of, hey, this is interesting. Why is that didn't happen? And they didn't answer me.
Huh, imagine that.
I know. Imagine a big company not wanting to admit their flaws. But that's okay.
I would have expected them to recall every single one of those Blu-rays.
Yeah, but at least they could put it on, like, future Blu-rays. Though it'd be
but
great
you're right,
they
might now that he's a Emmy winner, I guess.
Yeah, his name carries weight now, so I'm so happy for him. But it's just really exciting that, like, Star Wars actors won really big last night, and two of them were very historic wins, so it was just a really cool thing to watch. And, like, I was watching, because I have two accounts, I have my own account on Twitter and our account on Twitter. So, like, one side of my Twitter was just, like, the normal thing. But on the other, in my Star Wars Twitter feed, everybody I follow was just like, hooray for Star Wars actors! We're kicking ass and taking names! Yay! Except for one found Rian Johnson, that Episode 7 guy, and they're like, and someone was writing, why aren't you at home writing about Star Wars stuff? Get home! Go home from the Emmys! So it was a fun night overall. So I enjoyed the Emmys. So I always enjoyed. I was very excited because dreams. Well, you know who also doesn't have dreams? The people who get kidnapped this episode.
Oh, I thought you were I thought you were getting ahead and trying to pull Yoda into here. I was gonna say Yoda has dreams, and they're filthy, filthy dreams.
Yeah, and they're kind of watery and wet. But we're not there yet, Yoda. Hold on. Almost.
Yeah, Yoda doesn't have wet dreams. He has moist, swampy dreams.
Swamp dreams?
Yeah.
Ugh, that sounds gross. Well, you ready to get on with the episode?
I'm ready.
All right. Kidnapped is the 77th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on November 25th, 2011. It was written by Henry Gilroy and Stephen Melching, and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Some extra information for you. The Zygerians were first mentioned in Star Wars sourcebook written by Bill Slavicsek and Curtis Smith.
I'm thinking maybe Slavicsek.
Slavicsek, Bill Slavicsek, Mr. Bill. and it was published in 1987. The species remained relatively untouched by the expanded universe until 2008, when Star Wars: The Clone Wars project. The Zygerians played a major role in Slaves of the Republic, a story arc in the Clone Wars comic series written entirely by Henry Gilroy that ties into the television series. The episode followed the same premise, but featured a number of differences, most notably a redesigned appearance for the Zygerians, who were originally depicted in the EU as resembling humans with pointed ears, red hair, and bone spurs in their foreheads and chins. Dave Filoni felt like this was too close to the live-action TV show with limited makeup resources for aliens and opted to blend them with coyote-like appearances, stating that the coyote's trickster reputation helped the Zygerians look more cunning and deceitful. There had to be many changes from the comics, too. For example, the timeline of the comics was in Season 1, so Ahsoka was much younger, and Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Rex all had their Season 1 looks in the comic books. Also in the comics, Asajj Ventress was still Dooku's apprentice at the time, so they had to remove Ventress from the story entirely. Another change from the comic was that Obi-Wan fought a Basilisk guard originally. They instead had him fight Zygerian Darth Dinar, and they ended up keeping the idea of having a Basilisk character in the season by making Pong Krell who we saw last arc. Some more information. There's a bird creature in this arc. I just want to say they are not Convarese, because now we're always looking for those. They use the same creature model from Padawan Lost for this arc. These creatures are called Kyros birds, though it would have been really cool if they were Convarese, because this is a really kind of big Ahsoka. Well, not a big Ahsoka arc, but Ahsoka's doing some cool things this arc, as we will see next episode. One of the Zygerian slave ships share the same name in Arabish as a Portuguese slave ship from the early 1800s. It's called the Takora. The first Zygerian slave empire was shut down by the Jedi of the Old Republic and has been living in the shadows of the underworld ever since. And for the episode featurette, the theme of this season is doing one video for the entire story arc. This week, Ashley Eckstein was doing a behind-the-scenes tour of how the episode of Clone Wars is made. It's a really cool video. So I decided not to transcribe it for this arc. Just because it's a really, really cool video, I would much rather you go watch it. They really go into detail on the behind the scenes of making an episode, from the lighting to the character models to what roles that executive producers like Dave Filoni play. And I highly recommend going on StarWars.com, looking up this episode title, and watching the video. It's 7 minutes long, but it's just a really cool look at the process of them making Clone Wars. And it would also take me like 3 hours to transcribe the entire video, and I didn't want to do that. But it's just something that they showed a lot of the visual steps, and I just can't on an audio podcast show you the visual steps of what they went over. So I'm just not doing the episode featurette for this arc.
But hey, you know who else shows us the steps?
the dance mating steps of his mating dance. Shuffle to the left.
It's
move it back now, y'all.
Peppermint twist.
Three hops this time. Charlie Brown.
Yoda likes country line dancing. Yoda's a boot scooter.
A boot scooter, boot scooting boogie. You gotta be careful though. You can get under those skirts a little easily there, Yoda. But I think that's the point, right?
Okay.
I just imagine like someone dancing with Yoda, and you know the whole thing like little girls standing on their daddy's shoes and like and stuff like that. Yeah. I just imagine him just like clinging to a woman's leg and just riding along.
Just riding along, just like just yeah, gazing upward longingly every once in a while.
Hugging her shin. This is a good shin with right. A very good view.
I don't know. I feel this one this week is a little extra filthy too.
Where we are going always reflects where we came from. In bed!
This is kind of fitting because we were talking about me earlier in the episode, me being a sperm in my dad's ballsack earlier.
Yeah, and there you go.
That's what we opened with, so it's like we knew.
But we didn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. You might have planned it that way, but I don't think you did.
I did not. I will be so honest. I was not planning that.
You don't have
totally...
a note that says, mention my dad's nutsack in... right next to shout out to mom?
No.
No, good.
So, for some reason, I was thinking the one for next week was this week. So, and then I got to here and I was like, oh, that's not what I was thinking it was. Okay. So, act one?
Act one.
Actually, a quick question. Did you like this episode?
I did like this episode a lot, actually.
I'm really excited because this is my second favorite arc of Clone Wars. So, I'm very excited that we're here, too. Act 1. So, on the planet of Kyros, there's a colony of Togruta artists. You know, Ahsoka's people. And they're all like, yeah, man. No weapons means happy life, guys. We are peaceful, bro. Life is good. Except it's not good, since Count Dooku is knocking on Kyros' door. Governor Roshti calls Yoda, going, don't have any fighters among us, man. We're gonna get destroyed or something. Maybe we can talk to Count Dooku and give him a flower crown or something. He'll just leave us alone. And Yoda's like, no, that's not gonna happen, brah. And he warns about trusting Dooku, and he will send help. But Roshti says it's too late. Dooku has already arrived. Roshti strolls out to meet Dooku and his bad guy of the arc friend, Dinar, who is a Zygerian. Governor Roshti is like, we're peaceful, man. We don't want to get caught up in your war. And Dooku goes, well, that's great, because I have an ideal place where you guys can hang out during the war, where you'll have a place to sleep, and maybe you'll get 3 meals a day, and some great motivation to build stuff, but not for you. Darts, let's get started. And Darts gives the order to round up all the people. The Republic arrives with Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka, and Rex leading the charge. They get to the colony, which is oddly quiet for 50,000 people supposedly living there. Anakin and Ahsoka hop on one dual scooter, and Obi-Wan and Rex get on the other dual scooter. Hashtag squad goals as the four heroes drive around like a badass good guy biker gang. Everyone is on edge, though, looking for the colonists. Suddenly, biker droids round the corner, and we have a biker rumble fight. The bikes are all like, vroom, and Ahsoka whips out her lightsaber like, womp, 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 and Rex is all like, pew, 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 pew. And the droids aren't really funny because they're not the funny battle droids, so they're just kind of quiet. Except for when they die, they go, vroom. And so finally, they fight their way to the city center where there are more droids. It's a walk in the park fight for the Jedi, and the clones easily take out the droids, like taking milk from a kitten. But there are still no colonists to be seen. What do you think of Act 1, Chris?
I really like it. I really like the speeder bike fight in this.
That's one of my nodes. I love those bikes.
I love that they have like a sidecar with a big gun on it. And I like that it swivels around.
Yep.
The scene where he just flips right around 180 degrees and just starts shooting backwards is awesome. You wonder. It seems almost like speeder bike technology went backwards into Star Wars, because these ones are pretty fancy.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I guess they might be expensive to make, because I was like, these are very useful to have someone be able to turn back and forth to shoot instead of just all the other clones that just had a bike that shot forward. So if the guys got behind them, they had no defense from behind. So I was just like, those seem like really useful, but I bet they're really expensive to make. So that's probably why they only have two.
The Zygerian guy is like Space Wolverine. That's the first thing I thought. I'm like, oh, it's Wolverine.
Oh my god, it is. I just see kitties. I just always see kitties when I see them. I think kitties. But yeah, Space Wolverine. I never thought about that before.
And here at the beginning, when they're just like, you know, come to the separatist side, come to the side. I'm like, why would anybody care what a nonviolent artist colony? It's just like, no, you'll make art for our side. No, it's important that we win over this you know, we don't know. Is that planet tactical? Are they, does anybody, do they want it, you know, do separatists want it because it has resources on it or something? You know, I'm not really sure what the whole thing is. Is it that they're just trying to grab the people to, you know, because they'll fetch a good, you know, to fund the war through slavery or something?
Yes. That third one. I was reading more about the Zygarians, but I didn't put that much in the old notes. They used to be a massive empire in the galaxy until the Jedi of the Old Republic came along and took out their empire. And so they're being sided with the Separatists. They're trying to rebuild that empire. So pretty much they're just looking for people to sell. So okay. That's the whole point, is that they're selling people.
So the Separatists are just trying to get some money. It's just
I think a lot of it is like the Zygarians, if they grow really big and stuff like that too, it could having it. I mean, think of like the Mandalorian Empire and how big they are. I mean, if they can get another empire on their side, that's just a massive amount of things. And you know, you can send slaves out there for fodder, just like we send our clones out there for fodder.
Well, then you don't have to also pay for prisoners of war either.
Yeah. So. That is the main reason, is they're right now Dooku's working with Zygera to help rebuild their empire. Now it would be nice to, like, I don't know if it's like Mandalorian where it's kind of in a big important spot in space and they need that land. That I don't know. I think it's an Outer Rim territory.
I would imagine it is. That's where they all gotta hang out, on the wrong side of the space tracks.
You know, maybe this is just me speculating, but the Hutts are kind of on the side of the Republic right now. Like, they're allies. So maybe the Separatists are looking for, like, another, like, slaver people to build up to be their allies. That could be something.
A lot of nice yellow. It's the color scheme in this episode is yellow and orange and tans and stuff. I love that there's almost always a color scheme in certain episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one other note, but I think it's actually in the next part of the story. So I won't bring it up.
Okay. I was going to say, whisper it to me. They won't know. Our listeners won't hear it if you whisper. Don't you know that's how secrets work? If you whisper loudly into a microphone, people don't hear it. For me, I've always loved the design of all the different Togrutas. I can never say their name right, Togrutas, and how unique each of them look, because they each have different leku and they always have different like face painting and like they're all different colors too.
They're artists, so, man.
Yeah, but, I mean, but that's true with like all Togrutas. I mean, look at Shaak Ti. I mean, she looks very drastically different than the rest of them. But so like before Rebels came out and we got Ahsoka back, this episode actually always used to make me imagine what adult Ahsoka would have looked like. Just from seeing all of them, I was just like, wow, Ahsoka could look like any of these people. And now of course we have Rebels and we know what she looks like now as an adult. But like when I was younger and like first watching this episode before Rebels, like that's what I used to do. I used to just kind of like pause and look at all their different designs and just like think about Ahsoka looking like that. So I just used to do that, and so that's why that's a very sentimental thing for me too, about like in my days of like fandom Ahsoka. So it's so good to have Obi-Wan back. This is his first episode of season 4,
except in block hologram form.
That's true, which I don't really count, because the little bit of that we saw in Umbara, he was tiny and stuff, and
everything he was doing was off screen, basically.
Yeah, so it's so nice to actually fully have Obi-Wan back, because I really missed him. So one of the very first things I noticed when I watched this episode, and I've noticed it more and more the more I've watched this episode and future seasons and stuff like that, is how much more vocal Rex is. Before Umbara, he only usually talks if someone addresses him. Like, Anakin will ask him a question and he'll answer, or somebody, or an admiral will say something and he'll answer. And that's usually has been the norm for him seasons 1 through 3 in the first half of the season. Well, now that we have had Umbara and stuff like that, I first noticed in this scene that Rex is starting conversations. Like, when they're on that bike, he's actively talking with them and not being addressed first. And he's talking on the same level as his Jedi friends. And that's a big change, because he didn't used to do that before. And it's just one of those little ways that I think Umbara has impacted Rex to make him step up more in his character. Because I said it last week, and Umbara was the last big character arc for Rex. But I also said that from here on out, we're going to see how Rex has changed since then. And this is the very first example of that, is how much more vocal he's being on his own and not having to be addressed. So I think that's just a really cool way that they introduced that into the show.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
My last note is, and this is not a criticism, this opening act is a little bit of a touch of a slower pace. We get Dooku arriving and taking the people, and then we get the battle. But it's just a nice little run-of-the-mill Clone Wars battle where the Jedi showed up and they easily beat all the droids and stuff. And so it's really nice after like such a tense and emotionally charged arc like Umbara, just to have kind of like a reset button of like Clone Wars-ness. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's got the Trinity in it, so.
Yeah. Well, now it's like the Quadrinity, because pretty much from here on out, like, Rex is usually with the three of them. So squad goals. They're my squad. Rex is a lot of the times with the Trinity, so I always count them now as a squad.
And you gotta, you know, don't count out R2 either.
So, it's quintuplets of our Quinity.
It's just got all the main characters doing their thing, basically.
And then, like, Padme shows up and it's a Sextinity?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Then Yoda shows up and it's an orgy.
No, it's just awkward then. Oh, that's all my notes I had for Act 1. Did
Excellent.
You have anything else?
No, I got nothing else.
All right, Act 2. All right, Obi-Wan checks in with Boyle, who is now without his friend Waxer from last episode, and I cried a little bit. And Boyle says that the city center is secure. Commander Cody, who we haven't seen in a while, so it's good to see you again, Cody, comes up to Obi-Wan saying that the Separatist Command, Darth Dinar, has barricaded himself in the tower in the city center and has a message for Obi-Wan. Darth's message pretty much says, okay, you got me, let's negotiate terms of surrender. And Obi-Wan is like, well, that was a quick day. And suddenly, a wild Darth Vader appears. His special ability, Anger Point, is activated, which maxes out his attack stats. Yes, I just made a Pokemon joke, which is an actual ability, but Anger Point just seems like a really fitting ability for a wild Darth Vader. Anakin is pissed. He knows the Zygarians from the slave trade, and Anakin is not happy to see them. He wants to deal with Darts himself. And by deal, I mean pull an episode 2 on him and just murder the guy. And Ahsoka looks a bit surprised by Anakin's outburst. Obi-Wan is like, he asked for me, which is probably for the best, judging how fast you went from Zero to Raging Inferno in 0.2 seconds. Go find the missing colonist. And Anakin begrudgingly leaves. Ahsoka comes over asking what's got Anakin's panties in a twist. And Obi-Wan tells her how Anakin and his mother used to be slaves for the Hutt clan. And Ahsoka is like, got it. I'll be the parent again and go watch him. Up in the tower, Darth Skype Scoot Dooku, saying that he doesn't intend to actually surrender to the Jedi. He has the Jedi right where he wants him. And Obi-Wan kicks in the door going, oh really, do tell. And Dooku is just like, hi, Obi-Wan! Long time no see, boo! Can't wait to have your head on my desk. Bye-bye now. And he cuts the call. And Obi-Wan is like, so you were gonna surrender? And Darth is like, nah, bro, you're gonna kneel to me. And Obi-Wan sneakily turns on his comm link, so Anakin, Ahsoka, and Cody below can hear Darth's evil plan. Obi-Wan wants the colonist to be released. Dart says that he planted bombs all over the city. To show that he's not bluffing, he detonates a building right near Anakin, Ahsoka, and Cody. Anakin realizes that they don't have time for a planetary scan. He gets Cody to hook up R2-D2 to locate the bombs. Anakin and Ahsoka will go disarm them while Obi-Wan stalls for time, doing what Obi-Wan does best. Negotiating! Obi-Wan puts his lightsaber on the table to surrender. Dart starts monologuing about the Jedi from the Old Republic destroyed the great Zygerian Empire and blah 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 and they're rebuilding and yada yada yada. And Obi-Wan plays on Dart's arrogance by making a deal. Obi-Wan will fight Dart in hand-in-hand combat. No lightsabers, as was once the Zygerian tradition. If Obi-Wan wins, Dart must give him the location of the colonists and the bombs. If Dart wins, Obi-Wan will surrender himself to Dooku. Dart answers by throwing Obi-Wan across the room, and then into the floor, and then into a statue. And down below, R2 finds the location of the bombs. Anakin and Ahsoka move out to disarm them. What'd you think of Act 2?
Not bad, not bad. Pretty fun. Although, does no weapons mean you can't use the Force? Is the Force considered a weapon?
I assume so, because he didn't use the Force until the very end.
Well, I think he might have been just like prolonging it, you know, buying time with the fight.
I have that note in Act 3, because I think Obi-Wan, as much as it looks like he was getting his ass kicked, he had the upper hand the entire time.
He could whoop him in hand to hand easily.
Because we saw that in Act 3, just to get ahead a little bit, like, the moment that they got the bombs disarmed, Obi-Wan was like, finally, crush the droids with the Force, get my fucking lightsaber back, I'm ready. Like, I think he was just playing darts the entire time. But it's a brutal playing, because Obi-Wan got his ass kicked.
Well, Obi-Wan was being... I don't know what the ethics are of Obi-Wan gossiping to Ahsoka about Anakin's past. You know, does Anakin want Obi-Wan telling Ahsoka about his... Especially since, you know, Obi-Wan asks her, and she's like, no, he never tells me about it, except that he doesn't want to tell me about it. And Obi-Wan's like, oh, well, let me tell you all about it, you know?
You know, I had that note, too, because I'm like, on one hand, I was kind of surprised that Ahsoka didn't know, but on the other hand, it makes sense that Anakin doesn't want to talk about it.
Right.
And I feel like it's one of those, like, need-to-know basis. Because we know that the council knows, and we know that Padme knows. And I feel like for this, Ahsoka needed to know. Because now she knows to keep an eye on Anakin, because he could easily fly off the handle.
Yeah.
If she didn't know, she wouldn't be looking out and on extra guard for him. So it makes sense, but at the same time, I was always surprised that I was like, oh, Ahsoka didn't know. I guess it's not common knowledge. But I think it's one of those very much like a need-to-know thing.
Well, I don't know if this is officially in Act 2 or Act 3, because I'm not sure where the parts ended. But I like the scene during their fight where Anakin smashes his face into the hologram.
Yeah, it was this one. I didn't put out the whole fight in it, because it was pretty much just Obi-Wan getting his ass kicked.
Just getting fighted, but... getting whooped, but yeah, I like that where he just, like, the holograms where he's just like, guess what? But otherwise, that's all I got for notes for this part.
Yeah. I had to cry a little bit, because the team from White Ryloth, with Waxer and Boyle, and Numa and all that stuff, just rubs salt in my wounds that Waxer died last week, and here's Boyle, right in this episode, to hurt me so.
Right in the feels.
Right in the feels, and his friend is gone. Right in my feelings, because... I was just like, oh, it's Boyle. Where's Rat Waxer? Oh, yeah. He's dead. My feelings hurt. And so just like one of the reasons I like this arc so much, and we'll see this throughout this entire arc, is Anakin's side of the story. We were saying a lot last season that it's really hard for them to do a lot with these legacy characters like Anakin and Obi-Wan and Padme, just because they can't change too much before episode 3. And that's why Ahsoka's story is so good, because they can just do whatever they want with her and Rex and stuff. And so while they can't always push Anakin forward, the writers can shove him backwards really hard and force him in a place to relive his past. And so it's really great watching Anakin, like, slide back and forth in this arc. And that's actually one of my favorite parts of this arc is them pretty much just taking a dark side stick and poking Anakin in the face.
Yeah, and it's about all you can do to him. But we are getting closer. You know, every episode is getting a little closer to episode 3, so it's getting a little darker and more intense. I was just thinking about that as I was editing the last Dumbara episode.
Yeah, we're about, they originally wanted to do 8 seasons, and this is season 4, so we're halfway there.
Yeah, it definitely is taking a turn toward that direction.
Yeah, season 8 would have ended with the Siege of Mandalore, which was beginning of episode 3. Mm. So we do know that, so we're halfway there, but I mean, it's very, very smart, especially since, like, we don't really know a lot about Slave Anakin. When he was a kid and his mom and stuff, we just know what little bit we saw in episode 1 and stuff. So it's also nice to get a little bit of shading in there. We'll see it more next episode. Listeners, we're recording 2 episodes tonight, and that's why we know this. But there's a point where Anakin's like, yeah, my mom was sold in a slave market just like this. And that's nice because we didn't know that before. It's assumed, but we didn't know it. So it's also nice to kind of shade in that bit of past that we don't have on Anakin. And stuff like that. So it's just, his story is one of my favorite parts of this arc because he can't go forward, but they will shove him back as hard as they can.
Yep.
And they put him right in the middle of the thing that will make him the most upset, which is slaves. And the fact that Clone Wars, this kid show, is addressing slavery is intense.
That's pretty crazy, yeah.
Yeah. But my only other note was the Ahsoka one about not knowing Anakin's past. So that's all I had for Act 2.
All right. Well, we're going to get even more slavey in Act 3. That's for sure.
Yeah. I thought you said Grievy for a second.
No.
I was like, I miss Grievous in this episode. What? Was he hiding in the background, like hanging from the ceiling, laughing at Kenobi, getting his ass kicked? He would have enjoyed that
Wouldn't have been able to resist not getting in on that.
Yeah. So, Act 3. Anakin and Ahsoka find the first bomb. They quickly dispatch the battle droids guarding it. Ahsoka takes the panel off the bomb, looking for a wire or a timer to cut to stop it. And Anakin just strolls up, slices through the thing with a lightsaber. And Ahsoka is like, "You're so lucky that actually worked without killing us, young man." And Anakin is like, "Ugh, stop being my mom. You're younger than me. Let's go find the other bombs." Meanwhile, Obi-Wan is getting his ass thoroughly kicked by Darts, who is just happily beating the living shit out of the Jedi. Here's your face-smashing hologram. I forgot I put it right here. A battle droid crawls in, but Obi-Wan smashes Darts' face into the comlink, thus pissing off the Kitty Man, or Wolverine Man, I guess, to proceed to continue to kick Obi-Wan's ass. Ahsoka and Anakin find the last 2 bombs. There's a problem this time with the bombs being linked together. They have to defuse them at the exact same time. Not helpful at all, there are also sniper droids pinning down Anakin and Ahsoka. Let's check back in with Obi-Wan. Yep, he's still getting beat up. Back to Anakin and Ahsoka, they're running out of time with the bombs activated. Working together, they deflect the blast into the other droids, taking out the snipers. With a quick swoop in sync, they disarm the bomb, saying bye-bye-bye to the threat. I was so proud of that pun when I wrote it. They swoop in sync and say bye-bye-bye. Okay, anyway. I laughed so hard writing it. Shut up. I'm making myself laugh now. It's okay. Luckily for Obi-Wan, who is probably seconds away from getting his neck snapped, a droid calls in saying that all the bombs are deactivated. Darts drops Obi-Wan and runs to the window. He button mashes his detonator, but nothing happens. Obi-Wan is just like, "Oh my god, finally!" and uses the Force to crush all the droids in the room, but one, and gets his lightsaber back. Darts has one more dick move up his sleeve. His tactical droid has a bomb in it, and Darts activates it. Obi-Wan throws the droid out the window while Darts escapes into the tunnel. Ahsoka and Darth Vader give chase to the Darts' ship. The duo force leaps onto Darts' ship, and Anakin takes out one of the engines. Darts opens the back door for Anakin and Ahsoka to jump in. Darts realizes releases his pet Kraken, which is actually an animal called the Blixus. And Anakin chooses to fight the monster while Ahsoka goes to stabilize the ship. Meanwhile, there are poor animals in cages sliding out of the back of the ship, and they fall to their death. So rest in peace, poor little animal friend. Which made me sad, because I was like, Anakin, the animals are sliding off the back! Save the animal! And poor babies. Anakin stuns the Kraken enough to send it flying off the back of the ship to its doom. By the time he gets to the ship deck, Ahsoka already has Darts pinned down. They interrogate him about the missing colonists. When Darts doesn't answer, Anakin whips out his best Batman growl going, "Where are they?" Ahsoka is like, "Dude, chill!" And Darts tells him that the Zygerian Queen is bringing back the slave auction again to help rebuild their empire. On Coruscant, before the Jedi Council, Admiral Yularen informs everyone the colonists aren't on the planet at all. 50,000 people have just vanished. And Ahsoka is like, "Those are my people! We have super tall Leku! It's really hard for us to hide! People don't just vanish!" And Yoda insists that they must find the colonists who are in great danger. Slavery is a tool for the rise of the Sith, and we can only just assume that they captured Darth Dinar because it's not shown, but I just assume they did. The end.
Yeah, man, that traffic on Coruscant is flying by faster than it usually does for some reason this episode. It must be rush hour or something.
Yeah.
The scene where they have to take out the two bombs that are linked together, that's totally like watching someone play a video game.
Yeah.
Especially where they had to like both repel lasers at the same time to shoot a droid way up, like up on the high ground shooting down at them. The way that looked, it was totally like Lego, you know, Lego Episode 1 or whatever, you know?
I was thinking, like, the co-op and, like, Portal or something where you have to, like...
Yeah, yeah.
...time your shots and stuff.
It was totally, like, a video game. And it's funny, because I know they're not going to make a video game based on this show, on this episode, but it was still very video game-like. And I think the last droid that explodes there up in the tactical droid that explodes, where it's... I love their monotone and the way it was saying, "Get it off, get it off, get it off, get it off." Doesn't that seem like it should be, like, sampled into, like, a Daft Punk disco song or something like that?
Yes! Yes, it should be now. Because we say so. Come on, Daft Punk, get
somebody,
on that.
Daft Punk, I know you're listening. And it's funny, I have a note that's exactly like what... part of your synopsis. It's just Anakin is pissed. He's pissed.
I loved his. He pretty much quoted the Dark Knight with the "Where are they?"
Mm-hmm. And we have a light whip in this episode.
I love those. We get them so much more next episode, but they're just so cool.
Well, it totally is a callback to the Marvel comics. The last days of the Marvel comics, there was a character, and I always want to get her mixed up with Luminara because her name is Lumaya, and she was an evil Sith like character, and she fashioned herself a light whip that she fought Luke with, and Luke had to learn new lightsaber techniques to fight, you know, a whip. So I was wondering if this is a total callback to the Marvel comics.
Maybe. I didn't see anything in my episode notes, but it might be.
Yep, it's from probably the last dozen issues of Marvel Star Wars.
I have to say, like, one of my, like, sad things that didn't happen is I wanted to see Ahsoka face off against that light whip. That would have been cool, because by the time Anakin gets up there, I mean, she's already got it down, but it would have been really cool to see her face off. But they were really running out of time on this one. They could have trimmed Obi-Wan getting his ass kicked some for Ahsoka to fight.
Wow, that was fun, though.
It was fun.
But that's really all the notes I got for this.
It said that we're just like, yeah, Obi-Wan got his ass kicked. It was fun. Yay.
My only real important note is Daft Punk sample, get it off. Get it off. Get it off. Get it off.
To sort of repeat something I was saying, but to go into a little bit more depth, I like the opening episode of this arc, and how it's kind of a return to sort of regular Clone Wars that we've had in the previous seasons. It's much needed after the last crazy arc of emotions. And what's great about this episode is they still don't shrink away from the dark, heavy themes like slavery and stuff like that, and Anakin's mental state, and Rex is now thriving. So unlike earlier seasons where you might have like one big arc, like the Malevolence arc or the Ryloth arc and stuff like that, then follow it up with several adventure episodes, like one-shots and stuff, this is now the norm of Clone Wars. So we still have the show that we love and we feel that we love, but it still has that much darker filter on it that wasn't there in season 1, 2, and the first part of season 3. You still miss those one-and-dones, though.
I do. I like one-and-dones.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was a big fan of the Star Wars tale comics, too, which were like little one-and-dones. But, you know, this one's almost, a lot of times, even with an overarching arc, each, there still can be self-contained. You know, this one, you could not see the other, it's not left on a cliffhanger, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could not see the other parts of this story and still have this be its own little episode.
And we sort of mentioned this before. Obi-Wan is pretty clever. It seems like he's losing the fight, but he always had the upper hand. And if things ever got too dire, he could have just used the Force and stuff like that. We mentioned that, which was one of my other notes. Something we've mentioned before is while Anakin and Ahsoka are close, there's already evidence that she's starting to sort of drift away from the Jedi a bit. So seeing, I think, Anakin's behavior is just kind of like another push for her for that.
You can tell it's starting to get a little old with her now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like she is, every time he has a moment like that, she keeps having these, we kind of saw it in the Citadel when he was talking with Tarkin and she was just like, what are you doing? But now it's just like, oh my god, it's this again, like this is coming up, and you can see that she's kind of like, I guess questioning is the right word, but I mean just sort of the shock is starting to become the norm, and I don't think it's settling well with her.
No, definitely not.
So, it's kind of interesting to see them do that and stuff like that.
Well, you know, when she was less experienced, she was thinking probably maybe, you know, this is the way Anakin is. Maybe that's not a bad thing, you know. And now that she's getting more experienced, she's going like, oh no, my master is definitely not infallible, or you know, not completely pure of motivation or right all the time.
Yeah, it's an interesting metaphor of growing up, though. I mean,
she's at that age.
I mean, we all go through that with our parents. I mean, I remember like being in college and just on one hand, you know, my parents always used to give me the saying, "The older you get, the smarter your parents get." Which is true. Like the older I get, I'm just like, oh my god, my parents knew so much. Why didn't I listen to them more as a kid? But there's also a lot of things where I'm just like, my parents are not always right about things, and it's kind of humbling in the beginning, and where you're just like, oh, these people that you love and look up to your entire life, they're not always right, and they're human, and wow. And I think that's what Ahsoka's going through right now of, huh, my parents, Anakin and Obi-Wan, figures, which because they're pretty much her mentor figures, are just not always right, and I think she's starting to realize that.
Mm-hmm. And see it.
But that's all I had for this episode. It's a pretty straightforward episode.
Yeah, pretty. It's pretty straight up.
So, how would you rate it, Chris?
That goes right into my grading. I'm giving this one an 8.5. It's a super solid on the high end episode. You know, it's got a little bit. I think what really puts this up into the, you know, high eights is the having it be about slavery and Anakin. That's a great mix for drama, and they do a good job of mixing the two. Although, yeah, we'll hear what I say about the next episode, but they expand on it, you know. They just set it up here. This one's the setup of, like, Anakin hates slavers. And now he's pissed. And we'll see what direction it goes in after this. I'm going to guess that you rated it higher than me. Oh, no!
No, I didn't. It's still a high rating, though.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Hope, that's a shocker.
I know.
I feel bad because I just gave it away. I was so shocked that I'm like, oh, no, before you even got to say what it was.
Oh, don't feel bad. I kind of probably lowballed this a little bit because I know how highly I just rated M'Bara.
Right.
So that probably brought it down a little bit. But I like this episode because it's just a return to form after the super tense and emotional last arc. It's a great breather episode setting up the rest of the arc, really touching on what makes Clone Wars great from the previous seasons. Still, they don't shrug away from heavier topics like slavery. We get to see Anakin's mental state and how that takes a hit and giving him a kind of a stick nudge towards Vader. And I think it's like seeing Anakin faltering is a big moment for her. Poor Obi-Wan, he gets his ass kicked too, and it's really fun to watch. And we also got to see a little bit of what M'Bara did for Rex, making him more vocal and assertive. And so it's just a great romp episode, and it sets up the rest of the arc. So I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Well, I thought for sure you'd be higher than me, but...
You know, I mean, 8.5 is probably what I would do it. I just know how high I just scored M'Bara, and I was like, maybe right. I should be a little bit more critical about my scoring.
Yeah, see, I'm different because I'm in fresh territory, so I don't have any, you know, I don't know where it's... I don't know if I have what I have coming score-wise in the future, so it's going to be interesting.
Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or the Two True Freaks Facebook page. We especially like iTunes because if you rate and review our show, it helps people find the show. Or, you know, it also helps people find the show if you're just like, hey, there's a really great podcast called Jagas and Jedi, and you should listen to it and hear and tell your friends. This week, our feedback came from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Mercy Mission. I was so sad. I was the only person who commented about Sassy Commander Wolf.
And what you said was, Sassy Commander Wolf is my favorite.
He is my favorite. I was the only person who commented on him.
Now, I was talking about the robot from Buck Rogers that hung around Tweaky's neck like Flavor Flav's clock.
Yeah.
Gene Hendricks pops in. What are you talking about, Dr. Theopolis? And he's got a picture of Gary Coleman on... Buck Rogers. So that was his way of telling us it's Dr. Theopolis was the name of the robot on the small robot around the small robot's neck that we mentioned in that episode. And then Patrick Delmore, I must have mentioned Mojo Nixon in the episode, because Patrick Delmore writes, if you don't have Mojo Nixon, then your store could use some fixin'.
I only included that because I wanted to hear you read it in that voice.
You want to hear? Have you ever heard that song?
Yeah, I have.
All right, and then we got one from Aaron Henley. Awesome use of the old droids theme song, Chris. Thank you. That brought back some good times. I've never seen droids, so I have no memories of it. But hunting through grocery store video rental departments, watching the same two tapes over and over, and never getting tired of it. Good times. Anyhow, on to this episode. I got to agree with Chris about how all this was caused by a single manhole cover being exposed. That's pretty weak, to be honest. Wouldn't much larger cracks occur during a major earthquake? Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Granted, this is fiction, but there's no such thing as a 100% perfectly stable geological system. This was a nice detour, but that's all it is. A detour without any drama or real danger. I like the next episode a lot more, but we'll save my thoughts for then. See you guys next week.
Hey, it was super, super excited to have Sassy Commander Wolf, guys.
And here's Paul C. Kelly, who we found out a couple episodes ago was sent here by the Hair Metal Hero. Oh. You two have a side conversation in this episode about surprises that could happen in The Last Jedi. Chris made a hopeful request for Mala. Yes, I did. I only know who this is because I watched the Star Wars Holiday Special after listening to Chris hype it up. Sucker. Very confusing diversion to what I thought might be in this, LOL, although we did get Mark, Harrison, and Carrie. Great cartoon. I send them all there for the cartoon, to be honest with you. Great cartoon in the middle and a golden girl running the cantina shortly after. I listened to your commentary podcast where Hope watched this for the first time. Priceless. We will never be the same again. Life day. That is so true. Oh, and here we've done it again. We've come to our Kit Kat section, and we never talked about our Kit Kats at the beginning.
I have a Kit Kat, a Tunnock's milk chocolate Kofor caramel wafer biscuit, and a Ferrero Rocher.
And a what?
Ferrero Rocher.
Oh, those are delicious. I have one of those.
That's all I have.
I'm going to pull... All right, well, you can, I guess, pick any one of those that you want. I'm going to pull a Kit Kat. It's Japanese, and all it has is a picture of a pink flower on it. And on the back, it's got a samurai, a cat with a headband on, like a kung fu cat carrying Kit Kats.
Oh, I want a kitty Kit Kat! That's not fair!
Kitty Kit 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 Kat.
Dario, send me all kitty things always.
It's a kitty 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 Kit Kat.
Actually, I think I found the dark chocolate one that you had last week that I didn't know that I had. The one that has, like, the extra wafers on it? No, wait, I don't know. I just found a Kit Kat. I don't know where it's from. It doesn't have any weird, like, language thingies on it. Oh, wait, take it back. It has what looks like Spanish on it. Or maybe Portuguese. And it has hashtag my break.
Oh.
And have a break with Kit Kat.
Mine had a...
two burritas.
Mmm. I believe...
I have no idea where this is from. I'm going to eat it.
I cannot tell what this is. It's got a little flowery. Maybe it's supposed to be rose flavor? Like rose petal?
Mmm.
The chocolate on this is very dark. Very dark.
The middle of mine tastes like a pretzel.
Hmm. It's got, like, salt in it?
No, but it has that kind of, like, pretzel taste without salt.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Like a baked... Mm. Now, this one has wafer in it. And it's got, like, white paste also.
That sounds really good.
It almost looks like, you know, the frosting from maybe an Oreo or something, but...
I'll fight you for the kitty cat.
But I really can't put a flavor... Maybe that white paste must be where the rose sort of floral flavor is coming from. Huh.
Let me save that.
I don't know, it was good.
Yeah, there's pretzel whatever. Because it really does taste like pretzels in the middle of my kitty cat. So, yeah. Well, as always, if you're wondering why we're eating candy, Chris hates American Kit Kats, so our friend Dario sends us Kit Kats from all over the world, because he's a flight attendant, and as always, we love you, Dario. Thank you.
Mm.
Wow. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, a lovely website full of freakish, mutated podcasts of all types. And we pump them out like the Duggars pump out kids. Basically. I had to think of something. I didn't want to make a poop joke, you know? Wow, Hope, that's a new Hope laugh. I haven't heard that one before.
That one just got me like right in the 90s anime laugh. Oh, man. Have you ever heard, like, 90s anime laughs?
I guess not. I guess I just did.
Literally, if it's a woman and they're evil and then they're in a 90s anime, they just put their hand to their mouth, the back of their hand to their mouth, to the side, and they just go, hoo, 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 ah, hoo, hoo, hoo.
that's how they laugh. Mm. And so that's what I just felt like I just did. Wow. That's better than my evil laugh. Remember when I used to have an evil laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
I'm sure you still have an evil laugh when needed or when appropriate.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else can... Oh, yeah, that's right. We got a Facebook page, Two True Freaks. We got a Two True Freaks Cantina on Facebook, which is just sort of like a place to go talk about every... You know, everybody's... Right now, we're all griping slash celebrating J.J. Abrams being the director of Episode 9. Yeah, so it's that sort of stuff, you know, and place to go look for nerd news. And if you want to see what episodes are coming up, that's when you go to the Two True Freaks page. Then, of course, we've got the ever-popular Gene, the podcasting machine, who runs our Two True Freaks Twitter feed.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Gene! And, yeah, that's about it for Two True Freaks Online. I mean, there's a lot of our podcasters have their own Facebook pages, too. And you can go, you know, you can go talk more specifically about specific topics, you know, like... giant green Japanese monsters or reanimated corpses or
something. Eat It and Beat It
or some pornography or food
or some Hutu freaks, which you told to wedding people this weekend.
That's right, some of the wedding fans were big time Doctor Who fans to the point of where I didn't know what the hell they were talking about, so I pointed them to Hutu Freaks, where there's a lot of other people I can listen to there that I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Like, although I did blow their minds. They were like, I don't know how in-depth your podcast would be. We're pretty big nerds of Doctor Who. And I said, well, did you ever hear where that... I'm like, you know, there's a lot of episodes of Doctor Who that got lost to... that got erased or thrown out. And they're like, oh, yeah, we know that. And I'm like, well, did you know they took the script and got scripts to those and took some of the actors and... did audiobooks of them, and their eyes got as big as saucers, and they're like, no. And I'm like, well, our host,
the Irredeemable Shag?
Irredeemable, yes, our host, the AKA, Irredeemable Shag, he could probably recite all those by rote, even AKA, though I can't recite his stupid name. I know you're not listening, Shag, so fuck you.
Yeah, I was about to say, you should call him by his full name. Fuck you, Shag.
Mm-hmm. It's fair, you know, I shouldn't hate him because he has a very similar first name to me because mine is Shut the Fuck Up. So
it's okay, Shag. We actually really love you a lot.
I was telling people at work how you and I were joking about how we should have Two True Freaks Shut the Fuck Up, Chris t-shirts. And they really liked that idea way too much for my liking. So, they were like, can I get one of those shirts? And I'm just like, calm down.
Yeah, and Fuck You Shag also did an episode on the wilderness years of Doctor Who, too, which was a really good episode.
So hopefully they're listening to all that. So where can people find you?
I'm going to stop eating jelly bellies before I know I'm about to speak. Oh, man. So you can find me at JGuysAndJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter page. You can also find me at Hope Molnax, where I like to live tweet things. Like last night, I was live tweeting the Oscars.
There'll be some Rebels to live tweet, too.
Yeah, I will be live tweeting Rebels on JGuysAndJedi. Those usually, now that they have the new schedule, though, that's coming later at night, because I usually work Saturday nights. So those usually come later in the night, so on East Coast time. You can also find me at What the Fangirl. I just got the approval to do some cool stuff leading up to Christmas, so I'm still trying to figure out the semantics of that, but I should be doing that soon, and pretty much what it is that I'm going to be using some fan sites like Society6 and Etsy and Redbubble to take really cool nerd stuff and showcase it, so you know where to get some like really cool, unique nerd stuff for all your nerd stuff buying goodness, because, hey, let's be honest here, Christmas will be here in a blink of an eye. So, yeah, and you get to support artists, which is very important to me. I have a lot of friends that are comic book artists or sequential artists or just freelance artists, and a lot of my friends are like that, so it's something that's really important to me to make sure that these smaller artists are being showcased, and there's a lot of really cool stuff, and what gave me the idea was I found an artist who had taken the six main characters of Rogue One, and she had drawn them each individually with flower crowns. And of course, you guys know I'm a Bodhi Rook fangirl. So I'd asked her to make a t-shirt of one of these designs, and she's going to make one for all the characters. So my goal is to get one shirt for each character over a course of time. And they're really cute. Like, you know, Bodhi, like Chirrut's flower crown is glowing with the Force, and Baz's flower crown is a single tiny flower in his hair, and he looks so pissed off that it's there. So it was just, that's what really gave me the design. So pretty soon, once I figured out all the semantics of how it works and stuff like that, I'm gonna start doing that leading up to Christmas.
Excellent.
So I'm very excited about that, because supporting artists is really important to me, because it's supporting my friends, and you know, freelance artists need to eat too. So
I'm buying a book from a local Star Trek author tomorrow.
Yay!
Yep.
Good for you. And support your local comic book stores, because that's where I currently work, and comic book stores need help.
And Hope likes to get paid, yes.
And if you have a pull list, please go pick up your comics, because pull lists are the number one thing that actually hurts comic book stores, because people don't pick up their books, and we end up sitting on hundreds to thousands of dollars of merchandise that we can't sell. So please, please, if you have a pull list at a local comic book store, please go pick it up. And if you can't pick it up, then either trim down your list or talk to your store and let them know what they can sell, because comic book stores need help. Please go do that. And I will jump off my soapbox now. Jump. Well, that's about it for us. Wow, we had a short episode for once.
Well, we just got past the Umbara arc, where they've all been, for the most part, those were pretty epic episodes. So, yeah, we'll see how we go with some of these going forward.
Yeah. Well, I guess until next time, just brush off your Vader voice and be like, "Where are they?"
I might do a Batman wedding, so I've been practicing my Batman voice.
Oh, let me hear it.
By the power vested in me, by the state of New York, and the Church of Universal Light.
It's still not, scratchy enough. They also chose the Affleck Batman. So, I might have to watch BVS to work on my Affleck.
Affleck!
Yeah, no, I always think about, there's a little fan video.
I'd love to do a dirty Yoda wedding. If anybody wants a dirty Yoda wedding, I will do it for free. You might have to pay travel expenses, that's it.
Man, there's a little fan video of the Heath Ledger Joker and Batman, and he was just like, "Why do you have throat cancer?" And he's like, "I don't have throat cancer.
They're polyps."
I don't. Right, I'm good. I have to practice that Batman wedding, because halfway through it, I'm just going to be like, "That's what happens when you try to talk like that for too long."
Just smoke a carton of cigarettes beforehand. You'll be fine.
Yeah, no problem. done and done. Yeah. When I was at work, we used to listen to this one mixtape, and it had. Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World, it was the last song on it. And there was always one cook who would want to sing it like Louis. And every time. He couldn't get more than one or two lines out before he would just be like red-faced and coughing, trying to sing like Louis Armstrong. He was a tiny little white guy, too.
At this Batman wedding, just dress up like General Grievous. So if you cough, it makes sense.
Yeah, right? I would love to do a Greavy wedding. That would be awesome. General. So everybody who's you know, thinking about getting hitched, just keep that in the back of your head.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
I now pronounce you J Guys and Jedi's fans.
Congratulations.
You may lick the bride.
Ew, no.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop,
Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Two True Freaks has been brought to you today by Damanzo Core of Milan, Italy, and by the letters F and U.